There's some things you will never see the Almighty do until you wholly follow him. This is not about giving him a piece of you, giving him a day, giving him some time. You know, you can spend some time in prayer. You can even fall on your face and worship from time to time. But what he wants from you is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you. Well, how can I give him all that time? Well, the way you give him all that time is you conduct your life in accordance to his word in whatever you do. When you go to your workplace, when you go to your business place, when you go to the marketplace, when you come home, when you're dealing with your wife or your husband or your children or your neighbors. It's like he gives us his word, and in his word embodies every aspect of our being. How we deal with our neighbor, how we deal with the government he establishes, how do we deal with our spouses and our children. His word is the word, it's the standard by which those who are part of his kingdom now have to conduct themselves by. And how can you conduct yourself properly in his kingdom in accordance to your word if you're not studying diligently, seeking diligently, and hearkening diligently to obey all these commands? Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. Afflicted, heavily burdened, and realizing they're in trouble, the officers of the children of Israel direct their grievances toward Moses and Aaron. Then Moses and Aaron return to Jehovah to ask why he had brought trouble on the people. Previously, Jehovah had revealed to Moses what he was going to do. However, Jehovah had not revealed to Moses how he was going to do it, the process, or the means by which he would accomplish what he had spoken. Join us in this continuing and intriguing saga of back and forth between Moses, Pharaoh, Jehovah, and the children of Israel as they refuse to listen to Moses' instructions in the study, Israel Doesn't Listen. So, let's study. I want to jump here into Exodus, and so we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We stopped last week in Exodus 5, verse 21, and we noted that the children or the officers of Israel, the officers of the children of Israel, these were the individuals that the Hebrews had put in charge as overseers, as foremen and taskmasters over the Hebrew people, that these officers had gone to Pharaoh and they had declared to Pharaoh that they felt that what he was doing was not necessarily in their best interest. They were putting harder burdens on top of them by having them go to find their own straw. And Pharaoh, of course, refuted them, saying, you know, you guys got time to want to take time off and go into the wilderness and sacrifice and worship and do all that stuff. That's how he put it, that, you know, you got all this time on your hands so you can find your own straw. So they got upset. And on their way from Pharaoh, they made some statements because they met Moses and Aaron in the way. And they spoke to Moses and Aaron in a way that caused Moses now to return to Jehovah. So Moses returns, and now he's got these questions. And what you're going to see here is a pattern with Moses, because he's going to make statements that he's made before. And it's something about when we've heard from the Almighty and we expect everything to go smooth once we've heard, when we have these hiccups, that, you know, it creates issues for us, and we find ourselves, you know, questioning the Most High. And so in verse 22 says, Moses returned unto Jehovah and said, wherefore hast thou so evil entreated this people? Now, whether you see that not. That's an accusation. Moses is saying, you know, why? Wherefore has thou so evil entreated this people? You send me to deliver them, but when I go to deliver your word to them, they seem to turn on us. They seem to have an issue with us instead of believing you. Now, at one point when they first came, we know that the people rejoiced and then they worshiped. Now they are a little bothered. Well, more than bothered, they're upset. And their refusal or their words to Moses caused Moses to return to the Almighty. And then he says, why is it that thou even sent me? I mean, you send me to set them free. I go to set them free. You change, you know, you don't set them free. You make things more difficult for them. So what's the point? Moses, in his own words, are saying, you've not done what you said you would do. This is what he's saying. And so in chapter 5, verse 23, he says, for since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered these people at all. Now, we know things, but Moses knew things. Father had told Moses, says, listen, when you go to do, to speak to Pharaoh and to do the things that I showed you to do, Pharaoh is not going to let the people go. Now, did Moses forget that? There are times I have found in my own life where it seems as if when Father gives you an instruction to go and to say or to do certain things, that for some reason or another, we get the impression that all is going to go the way we want it or the way we think it should. I remember distinctly when Father spoke to me in the Christian Reformed Church about transitioning to the Sabbath. He specifically told me, you're going to lose some people. He said, you're going to lose your support structure. Now, of course, I heard that, but I didn't hear it. You know, it's like, if you're going to cause me to go in this direction, then surely you're going to prosper me. Surely you're going to protect me. Surely you're going to protect the resource stream that is there. And the fact of the matter is that what Father was doing is showing me that my dependency was on the things that I had established, the connections that I had made, the people that I had worked with and worked on, and the folks who were supporting me. And I'm thinking, we got a relationship. Surely these people will not turn on me. Surely these people will be there. After all, this is your word that I'm saying to them, and he's already warned me, but I didn't want to hear that. In fact, I didn't hear it, but I heard it. So when it happened, I couldn't say he didn't tell me, but I didn't want to believe it. And so because I didn't want to believe it, I was able to have selective amnesia. How would you? That's how I put it. I had selective amnesia. I forgot the things that I did want to hear, and I retained the things that I heard. And when it happened, it was a devastating blow, but it didn't have to be because he warned me. And so Moses is experiencing some of this. He's got instructions. He's been told that the people that he was going to speak to, the Pharaoh, was not going to hear him. And for whatever reason, he's upset now. As I said, remember, Moses had been told that Pharaoh would not let the people go. And in two chapters, actually chapter 4 says, and Jehovah said unto Moses, when you go to return into Egypt, see that thou do all these wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thine hand, but I will harden his heart that he shall not let the people go. So now Father is doing what he said he would do. And this is not Pharaoh, this is Jehovah doing. In verse 1, it says, then the Lord said unto Moses, now shalt thou see what I will do to Pharaoh. And I want you to notice these words that are in this verse. He says, for with a strong hand shall he, Pharaoh, let them go. And with a strong hand shall he drive them out of his land. And as I'm looking at this, because this word here is the same word as mighty hand. It's like, okay, Father's going to deliver them with the mighty hand. But what Father is going to do is he's going to deal with Pharaoh in such a way that Pharaoh, with his own strength and might, is going to drive the people out of Egypt. That word, kazak, means strong, stout, mighty. It's the same word that Father used earlier when he talked about that. And so Jehovah tells Moses that Pharaoh think, basically he's saying Pharaoh thinks he's mightier. He's stronger, more mighty than me. And Jehovah had used this word in his dialogue in chapter 3 when he says, and I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not by a mighty hand. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. And so what is he saying? He's saying Pharaoh think he's mighty. Now, when Moses came to him and he says, listen, who is this? I don't know him. I don't know him. When Pharaoh said he did not know Jehovah, what was he saying? He was saying that he don't have to listen, nor did he have to listen to this God. So if I don't know him, why should I listen to him? Who is he that I should listen to him? And what Father is knowing that he's dealing with a person that has this huge ego, this power structure that has elevated him to the top of the food chain, if you would, to where everybody now is bowing down to him. He's the most powerful person in the land. And it's like, you know, I don't have to listen to this God you're talking about. So Jehovah's saying that by the time he is finished with Pharaoh, with the strong, mighty hand, the same strong, mighty hand he held on to the people, he will let go with the same mighty hand, and then drive the people out with that mighty hand. Basically, Pharaoh is going to want the people gone more than he want them there. Jehovah turns his focus to Moses, because here again, Moses is questioning the Almighty. It's like, you sent me to these people, and now because you've sent me to these people, it seems as if you're using me to evil entreat them. So what's the point of you sending me in the first place? He tells Moses, he revealed himself to him by his name, Jehovah. And then he goes on to say, he did not reveal himself by his name, Jehovah, to Abraham, to Isaac, or to Israel. In verse 2, he spoke unto Moses and said unto him, I am the Lord. I want you to try to put this in the context of your child challenging you. It's like, I'm the parent. But look at how he does it. He says, I am the Lord. Because now remember in verse 23, he says, you sent me to the people and he has done evil to this people. And you haven't delivered them. You've evil entreated them. And you haven't delivered them. Now, remember now, at one point, Father was about to take Moses out until his wife intervened. And here Moses now is really challenging Jehovah. He says, I am Jehovah. And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of God Almighty, the mighty El. But by my name, Jehovah, was I not known to them. And I have also established my covenant with them, to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, wherein they were strangers. And I want to just take a moment and just remind you of these particular covenants, because he made a specific covenant with Abraham, and then he turned around and made the covenant, and these are land covenants, with Isaac, and then he turned around and made the land covenant with Israel after he changed his name, or before, or right at the same time. And then he's going to make this covenant to the children of Israel, so that they now can lay claim to the land. Genesis 15:18, on that day, Jehovah made a covenant with Abraham and said, to your descendants, I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates. And we believe that this is from the Nile to the Euphrates, all the way in Egypt, on the other side of Sinai, all the way beyond Israel, beyond Syria, beyond Tyre and Sidon, all the way over beyond Jordan to the Euphrates. And then he says, and just so you know, it's the land of the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Raphaites, the Amorites, the Canaanites. So it wasn't just the land of Canaan, is the point he's making here. This wasn't just the land of the Canaanites, the Girgasites and the Jebusites. And then he turns around in a few chapters later, and as he called Isaac, and he says that Jehovah appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Because there was a famine in the land at that time, and Isaac was about to do what his father Abraham had done. And father says, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And there's a tendency for children to follow the path of their fathers when it comes down to certain similar situations. You see, if Papa was a Rolling Stone, there's a chance that his son might want to be a Rolling Stone. If Papa's got some issues, there's a chance that's going to pass down to his son. And so when Isaac was experiencing a famine in the land, he was reminded of when his dad experienced a famine in the land, and he looked to his dad for an example and decided to do the same thing. And father has to intervene and says, nope, don't go. Dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. I'm going to show you where to dwell. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed, I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham, your father. So he's saying all these countries. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And what did Isaac do? He dwelt in Gerar. And then he comes to Jacob, Israel. And in chapter 35, he says, and God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And he said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac to thee, I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. And so we see that Father has made this land promise to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, Israel. And in verse 5, it says, and I've also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage. And I have remembered my covenant. Now, this is a different covenant. This is a covenant now where Jehovah speaks to Moses about the covenant of deliverance made to Abraham. Remember, he said to Abraham, know of a surety, thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve, I will judge. So Moses doesn't know. Now understand something. There's been some statements said, like when Moses was in Egypt and he killed that Egyptian, and then he comes out the next day and he wants to settle the dispute between the two Israelites who got to fight. And he says, who made you a judge? See, they didn't know. Moses didn't know that from the time he was born, he had already been selected and chose. So that when he brings judgment on Egypt for what it did to the descendants of Abraham, that he would now walk in that office, if you would, of judge over Israel. And what's interesting is that after Moses' death, what was Israel governed by? Judges. He says, I will judge. And when Father judged Israel or judged Egypt and he brought Israel out of Egypt, what did he do? He set judges over Israel. Moses was the first one. So when we get to the point to where Moses is now sitting in the tent and the people are coming and he's judging all of their situations, their issues that they're having with one another, and then he's going to select elders who will judge. And Father today is continuing to set judges over his people in the sense of elders, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers who will equip the saints. How are they going to equip them? Equip them with his instructions. They will continue. And this is how even those who are the least among us should be able to judge matters in the midst of us. But the question is what will they use as the base for their judgment? You can't bring worldly judgment into the house of Jehovah. Father says, no, don't take your matters before the world's judges, the world's courts. The world's courts are using a different law to judge my people when you should be using my law to judge among yourselves. He says, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance, and thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. Now, this is what Father is saying to Abraham when he's telling him about what's going to happen. And now Moses and his generation is going to be the one that bring to pass or fulfill these words that were spoken. Verse 6, wherefore say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So what was Moses' complaint? You're evil in treating these people. You send Moses and it seemed. Now here's how things seem. And anybody who have had life outside of covenant with the Almighty, there comes points in your life where it feels like before he came in your life, things weren't as bad as they have gotten. Now, I don't know about you, but I've certainly experienced that myself. And when I was in the world, things were hard, but I dealt with the world on a worldly standard. They were hard. Now I come into the kingdom and Father says, you can't use those standards anymore. You got to operate by a different standard. Well, the world ain't operating by this standard, Father. You see, the standard that you want me to operate by, according to the world standard, make me look weak. Make me look soft. And he says, well, you know, the world don't understand my ways. My ways is not the world's ways. And you can't operate in the kingdom by the way of the world lest you be worldly. And it's unfortunate that there are too many people claiming to be in the kingdom operating by a worldly standard. He says, I will rid you out of their bondage. And I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And so what is he saying? I'm going to bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. Tell the people that. The people says, your showing up has made our burdens worse. And they don't know that even though it may seem for a moment that their burden is more difficult, it's all part of the process of judgment on Israel, on Egypt. Now, it would seem that that generation would see that the creator of the universe who had sent Moses to deliver them was greater than Pharaoh, whom they knew to be the most powerful man on the planet at that time. Verse 7 says, I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and you shall know that I am Jehovah your Elohim, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And so why is he doing all this? He's making their burdens more difficult, it seems, because this is not for them. What they have to do is endure. They have to endure. Because ultimately, they're going to be delivered. I'm going to tell you something. It is the enduring part that is hard. It's that part. Because you would think that, when I give my life to the Lord, everything's supposed to get better. They told me that, the reason why your life is so difficult is because you ain't saved. The reason why you're going through all this stuff is because you're living worldly, but you give your life to the Lord and it'll get much better for you. And it's like, okay, we tried that. The world didn't get it. And so he says, I will bring you in unto the land concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, Israel. And I will give it you for an heritage. I am Jehovah. Now remember, the people is upset at Moses. But Father says, go tell him what I said. And so Moses spake unto the children of Israel. But guess what? They doesn't listen. They don't hear. Or they don't want to hear, or they don't listen to what Moses says. And so what he says, but they hearken not unto Moses. Why? Because of anguish of spirit. Whose spirit? Their spirit. They had an anguish of spirit, and because of cruel bondage. One, they had cruel bondage, in a sense, before Moses came. That's why they cried out. Father said, I heard the cry of my people. They were crying out long before Moses came along. And Moses comes along and they're crying out and now they're angry. They still got bondage, but they're angry. Their spirit is angry. And who are they focusing this anger at? Moses. So they don't want to hear Moses because of anguish of spirit. And that word anguish there, or first hearken, is that they didn't hear or listen. They didn't shema. Moses is telling them. Now, who's telling Moses what to say to them? Jehovah. So they've got an angry spirit now, but it's directed toward Moses, but it is the one who sent Moses that they're truly upset at. And this is part of what I and ministries and saints, if what you're doing is what he's instructing you to do, you can't take the anger of the people personally. But that's hard because you're dealing with flesh and blood. You don't see Jehovah, you see them. You know what he said, but you are at the brunt of their response or their anguish of spirit or their hurtful words that they speak. And so they don't listen because they're angry. This is where, whether we like it or not, people who claim Yeshua or Jesus as Lord, for the most part, lifestyle If they examine their lifestyles, they would, and they're honest with themselves, they would see who's Lord in their lives. So what do they say? With their lips, they say he's Lord, with their lips. But their actions say something else. If we examine ourselves and we constantly examine ourselves, I mean, you think about it. If you were the boss and you were the employer or employee, would you give yourself a raise? Would you give yourself a promotion if you honestly assessed yourself? One of the most difficult times in my life was when I stopped. Well, I didn't stop then, but I saw. When I came to the realization, the face-to-face encounter with myself, for a brief moment in sanity, not insanity, but in sanity, I couldn't blame my wife for not wanting to be with me. Because I had to come to the conclusion after a careful examination of myself, if I could get away from me, I would too. If I could have got away from me. And this is where suicide start coming in, because I didn't like the person I was. And then trying to force this person on her, trying to force who I was on someone else, not even liking me, and coming to realize at that moment, I was my problem. Because until we come to that point, we're not willing to make any change. It's always outside of us. It's always somebody else's issue. They're the reason why I'm like this. Well, if you think about it, you was like that before they came in your life. That's who you was. They just brought you out. You see, their presence in your life brought to the surface the you who was lurking beneath. You can put your smile on and your face on and your facade on and you can fool the people. But I'm going to tell you something. Nothing brings out of what's in a man like a woman does. You can put your best feathers on and you can strut and look good. And then you get her. And I was like, man, what have I got myself into? Mm-hmm. Hallelujah, somebody. See, what is going on is that now, probably for one of the first times in your life, you got to deal with what's there. You can't cover it up no more. It's not as easy. You could cover it up from the person who don't live in the same house you live in. In fact, you can cover it up from the people who live in the same house who may not live in the same room or sleep in the same bed. But the person you have to live with is you. And the thing about it is that sometimes we don't see ourselves for who we really are, and it takes somebody getting close to us to expose us. They become a mirror, you see. And so now the people are angry. They're angry with Moses. And that word anguish is short, impatient. It also embodies those two words. So they're angry in the sense is that you came to deliver us, but we still in bondage, bro. As a matter of fact, now you've come and the bondage we were already under, you made it worse. The children of Israel revealed their rebellious nature towards Moses and Jehovah while still in bondage in Egypt by not listening to Moses as he told them what Jehovah had said to them. So what do? They refuse to listen. They refuse to hearken. And the children of Israel's refusal to listen to the words Jehovah gave to Moses to give them revealed a lack of faith in Jehovah and in Moses. The lack of faith demonstrated by the children of Israel would manifest itself repeatedly from this point forward until Jehovah gets so angry with them that he swears in his wrath that they would not enter the land he swore to them. And this is, you know, it is so terrible when Father gets to this point. Now, in Numbers 32, it says, and Jehovah's anger was kindled the same time, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore unto Abraham. He said they wouldn't see it. Now, one of the areas of grace and mercy, at least Moses got to see it. They never saw it. He says, I swear they shall not see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Israel, because they have not wholly followed me. And I'm going to tell you something, brothers and sisters, if I may be so bold, there are some things you will never see the Almighty do until you wholly follow him. This is not about giving him a piece of you, giving him a day, giving him some time. You know, you can spend some time in prayer. You can even fall on your face and worship from time to time. But what he wants from you is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you. Well, how can I give him all that time? Well, the way you give him all that time is you conduct your life in accordance to his word in whatever you do. When you go to your workplace, when you go to your business place, when you go to the marketplace, when you come home, when you're dealing with your wife or your husband or your children or your neighbors. It's like he gives us his word, and in his word embodies every aspect of our being. How we deal with our neighbor, how we deal with the government he establishes. How do we deal with our spouses and our children? His word is the word, it's the standard by which those who are part of his kingdom now have to conduct themselves by. And how can you conduct yourself properly in his kingdom in accordance to your word if you're not studying diligently, seeking diligently, and hearkening diligently to obey all these commands? I mean, it's something how Torah observant people may not honor the Sabbath the way Father says honor the Sabbath. People make excuses for certain things. They want the Almighty to give them a pass on this or a pass on that. And it's like, you know, just because he doesn't zap, just because he doesn't do or, you know, put you in time out because you decide you're not going to obey at this particular moment, you're going to take matters in your own hand. He says, okay, I mean, that's on you. But understand that embedded in the word, I'm not mocked. Whatever you sow, you're going to reap. The wages of sin is death. You may think that your actions is not going to bring any kind of recourse, but every time you act, there is a reaction, and you may not see that reaction, but it's a supernatural. Because I'm going to tell you something. You can't slightly disobey the Almighty without giving place to the devil. The enemy is constantly watching. He's going about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He's looking for your weaknesses. He's looking for your areas of rebellion and disobedience and excuse making. And he will exploit every area where you aren't diligent in hearkening or obeying his instructions. And if there's something to be found, guess what? He will find it. He will. He says, there's two. Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun. For they have wholly followed the Lord. And Jehovah's anger was kindled against Israel. And he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years unto all the children, unto all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. People who have been oppressed, afflicted, abused, experienced bondage for long periods of time, we must be careful that their heart, our heart, does not grow hard and that we do not become stiff-necked toward Jehovah. And this is not something easily recognized because it hides or cloaks itself in having a form of godliness. You'll find, you know, some of the most hardened hearts toward Jehovah are religious people. These are people who are going to church, people who are attending. I mean, you may have experienced, they got lust in their hearts, they got anger in their hearts, and I'm seeing some troubling trends among messianics who are using profanity like it's okay. You know, the use of profanity is the presence, it indicates that you're in the presence of a perverse and profane person. That's what it means. If profanity is coming out of you, that's perverse and profane language. Where is it coming from? And if you're okay with that, and if you're not convicted by that, then that's a problem. And so if you're dealing with people who claim to be people of the Most High, whether you use Yahweh, the Lord, God, Yahuwah, Jehovah, whatever name, Aisha, whatever name you use, if these profane and perverse words are coming out of you, it means that there is profane and perversion inside of you. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. When people open their mouths and speak, it shows you what's in their heart. Don't be fooled. Take note. People will show you who they are. They'll tell you who they are. And why would you yield and submit to that kind of person? What you should do is, if you love that person, is, you know, ask them, why do you use that language? Are you feeble-minded? Are you ignorant? Do you need some vocabulary classes? You need to learn the proper language, English, how to talk to people. See, you know, I'm at a point now when people want to raise their voice at me, I don't even want to talk to them no more. Like, who you think you are that you can now just raise your voice at me and talk down to me? If I allow that and permit that, then what am I doing? I'm going along with your foolishness. When you come to your senses, we can talk. When you come to your senses, we can talk. Because you're not intimidating me because you want to raise your voice and, you know, your eyes get all confused looking. It looks demonic. I mean, when you think about it, imagine somebody, you look like a demon. And if you respond to that, you're going to have to respond in a demonic way. Because if you don't, then if you use the wisdom of Solomon and you continue to keep a calm voice, what does the Bible say? A soft answer turns away wrath. I got to get to that point. Because when somebody, you know, raise their voice at me, it's like, you know, hey, you know, I ain't there yet. So I go into shutdown mode. What is it? Powering off. Like one of these days as I grow, you know, it's okay, I can do that. And so, you know, some of these are hardened people. They go to church, synagogues, temples, mosques, assemblies, and yet they do what is in their hearts to do and ask God to bless it instead of doing what Jehovah say to do. And just this week, I had a couple of encounters, one with a messianic prophet. Now, I won't give you the details, but he challenged me because I said something to him. I asked him a question. And when I asked him a question, his response exposed what was in his heart. He's going to tell me, I'm accused. You trying to accuse me of something? No, I didn't say that. You said those words. Why did you choose those words to respond to me? I never used those words. And I said, the words you chose shows what's in your heart. I didn't call you out. You called yourself out. And then he said to me that the reason why he didn't contact me when he was going through something that brought him to this point that I questioned him about, he says he didn't do it because he thought I would be one of those people who would tell him to wait on God. I would be one of those people that would tell him to wait on God. God will fix it. But won't he? You don't believe that anymore? See, he's impatient. Let me tell you something about people. There are people who don't even realize it. They judge themselves because they know they've done something. And because the Father doesn't judge them or put them in timeout, they put themselves in timeout. They beat themselves up while they're in timeout. They go through a process. I've had people say to me, you know, I've been celibate for 10 years. I've been celibate for 15 years. It's like, okay, how many years should you before you? How long do you go to keep yourself? I mean, you claim to be holy, right? You claim to be a man or woman of God. How long do you have to do that? And so there comes a point to where people break down and they give themselves permission. And now they want the sanction of the Most High or a representative of Him. And there are too many believers sanctioning stuff. They're sanctioning it. Let me tell you something. Just because you go along with it, I'm watching these folks. If your son is a homosexual and he wants to marry another man, would you attend the wedding? Well, what kind of question is that? You're a believer. Why are you asking a question like that? Because you're going to go to the wedding? You're trying to get approval? And then to watch all these people say, sure, I'll go. Sure, I'll go. Sure, I'll go. And all of that validates the rebellion in the heart of the person to go against what is written. I don't care if you get 1,000 saints, so-called, that go and validate your rebellion against what the Almighty has called an abomination. That doesn't sanctify your rebellion. And there are too many so-called believers that are giving approval to stuff, not judging it. And the more people give approval to this, the more it's going to happen. And the moment you begin to say something to people, I mean, get this. Facebook has public and private mode, right? Just because it's your page don't mean it's a private page unless you set it to private. When you set it on private, I can't see what you say. But when you set it to public, it's open for public dialogue. So how can you say, how dare you come on my page? Well, it's a public page, bruh. The moment you make it public, it's open to the public. And if I come on your public page and say what you're putting out there publicly, that what you're putting out there publicly, and I publicly say it is wrong, you can't accuse me of coming on your private page, because if it was private, I wouldn't see it. Stop lying to yourself. Stop fooling yourself. Folks, it's public. And the people who want to spout their nonsense publicly. And then there was this pastor. And he put a post out there, pastors, now you're addressing us. You're addressing shepherds. Pastors, don't go on your Sunday services, blah, blah, blah. And I simply responded, well, if you are having services on Sunday and rejecting the seventh day Sabbath, then what you're doing is causing God to vomit. And I didn't get a response like I'd been getting. And when I haven't, you know, I put this out there last night. I didn't get no response last night. Didn't get no response this morning. So I decided I'd go on the page and see. And guess what? Delete. He deleted my response. Okay. I didn't want to antagonize him any further. So I just left it alone. Because, see, people will show you where they are. And once they show you where they are, you've done your part, Arthur. You put it out there. He deleted it. He didn't want to hear it. So he can't say that he wasn't told. Many argue that the election results, they want to say, you know, folks are stealing stuff. It's like, if God is in charge of this election, then whoever he has in place to be the president is going to be the president. Can the devil steal from God? It's like, really? I have some folks getting upset right now. I'm not here to try to make you upset. The fact of the matter is that you're saying God said, and when it's all said and done, if God said it according to what you said, then that should be the reality of the matter. Right? It should. Folks are operating in conspiracy theories, deep state. They berate me because I say God is not in politics. And let me just bring this up to you again. The politician master is the Constitution of the United States. When a person becomes a politician, elected to office, they swear on the Bible to uphold the Constitution, not the other way around. So they're making a declaration public for all to see to uphold the Constitution. So what is the vow they've made in the presence of God? To uphold the Constitution. Right? Well, how can they uphold the Constitution of the United States and walk in the Torah? What does that say about the Sabbath? What does that say about the feast? What does that say about the instructions, the commandments, the things that are required of a person who is upholding the word of Jehovah? It becomes a problem. You got two masters now. You can't have two masters. People look for loopholes in the word or take scripture out of context to support their agendas. Something I know all too well how to do. I've done it before. You'll find the scriptures to support what you want to support. You'll take scriptures out of context to do it. It is not the easiest thing in the world for a human being to submit himself, herself, wholly to an invisible being surrounded by visible people. It's difficult. Because there's something going on in you that is causing you to submit to the power of the Most High while being around people who is operating in a whole different legal system. It's like you now got to navigate two legal systems simultaneously, recognizing which legal system is the greater. Walking by faith. Being led by the Spirit requires a reliance on Jehovah and his word in ways we have few, if any, modern examples to look to, which is why we must look to Jehovah, his words, his Spirit, and faith in Messiah, Yeshua. And as the word came forth a week or so ago, the days ahead are filled with uncertainties. But one thing is for certain, his word is truth, and his word doesn't change. And so here, Moses is encountering the children of Israel, and they got some issues. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. The refusal of the children of Israel to listen to Moses caused doubt in Moses that if they would not listen, how then would Pharaoh hear him? That was his issue. The refusal of the children of Israel to listen to Moses did not stop Jehovah from making good on his promise to Abraham. He continued to send Moses to speak to Pharaoh and to the people. Both of them were hard-hearted. Both of them were hard-hearted. The refusal of people to listen to us does not stop Jehovah fulfilling his words. If we won't speak for him, he will raise up someone else to speak to the people on his behalf. That's just the way it's going to be. Moses has Jehovah instructing him and the children of Israel and Pharaoh refusing to hear him. Moses now have issues with himself, talking about uncircumcised lips in verse 12. And Moses spake before the Lord, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me? Who am I of uncircumcised lips? And Moses used this term twice in this chapter. He uses it again in verse number 30 when he says, behold, says Moses, says Jehovah, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. And how shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? And this seems to go back to what he was saying before, that he, you know, didn't know how to speak. You know, he wasn't eloquent in his speaking or his communication. And the fact is that Moses was an eloquent speaker. I mean, Moses was trained in Pharaoh's house. He had the best tutors, the best instructors. He was raised to become royalty in the house of Pharaoh. He wasn't a common man. And that brings us to the conclusion of this portion of scripture in Exodus. Next week, we'll pick up in the remaining verses in this chapter. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.